Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, a podcast on mental health issues. I'm your host, Ike Evans, and today we are delighted to bring you episode 107, A Therapist on Racial Grief.
The way we communicate about minoritized people is pretty violent, actually, in some ways. I always, when people bring this up, I actually ask them to think for a second, are we seeing white people splash across the papers in their desecrated bodies? No. And people still care about those people who are being injured at that point. Why do you need to see images of Black people actually being killed to actually care?
We're not doing so well right now. As we enter 2021, we are beyond exhausted, wondering how much longer this pandemic will go on, what the post-pandemic normal will look like, and what help we can count on. And life keeps on coming at us. As I record this, it has been a week and a half since a pro-Trump mob briefly took over the Capitol. So now, the future of our democracy itself is in question. To put it simply, the last year has been entirely too much. Not just that, but in many ways, these awful circumstances serve as a reminder of just what a moral pivot point the Black American experience has been and continues to be. Everything that's going on isn't just about us, but, if you ask me, is not fully comprehensible without us. Joining me today is somebody who, I am quite certain, will be able to help me drive home just how true that is. Dr. Chase Anderson is a fellow in child and adolescent psychiatry at the University of California, San Francisco. He recently published a piece for Stat with the headline, "I'm a Black Psychiatrist. I'm never prepared for the emptiness and grief I feel when police shoot a Black person." This conversation is about how our professional identities are only somewhat helpful, only somewhat protective, during the kind of harsh weather we're currently experiencing. Chase, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor and a delight to be with you.
I'd like to start with a quote from the piece that you wrote. "The feeling of being flatlined is probably protective because once I propel myself through the numbness, rage roars to life. The wrath I feel that such horrors occur over and over and over again replenishes the venom that had subsided since the last shooting. At times it feels like it is eating me alive as I hone and transmute my anger because to be an enraged Black man in America can be lethal. We're killed even when we aren't upset." So what was, and that's mostly for our listeners just to get a sense of the flavor of the piece, what was your aim in writing this?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I wanted people to feel seen. That was my overarching aim, and that is my aim with every piece that I do. I really want people to feel seen and heard, especially if they haven't been able to have a voice. I'm fortunate enough to be in a position where I can use my voice for others, and I wanted to use the piece to show that I'm a person, and we are people, and the things that are happening in America and across the world in terms of race affect all of us. And I really wanted to give minoritized people a space to say, like, hey, I am upset about this, and justifiably so. We live in a world where people who are white can go out after a baseball game that they win and go and do whatever they want and wreck cars and things like that. But a Black person can't be upset about being angry that other Black people are being killed. Asian people who are Asian minorities cannot be upset about how they're being treated during coronavirus by people who are racist or enacting racist behaviors. So I wanted this piece to be a way of saying you're not alone. You are seen by at least one person. You are seen by a lot of people. And the emotions you are feeling as a society, as African Americans, as Asian minorities, as Indian minorities, as Native American minoritized people, you were all seen. And that's what that piece was supposed to be around.
So, yeah, I mean, kind of where I, how I often come at this. So, you know, long before the civil unrest of last summer, I have thought about all the ways that as a communications professional, so-called, that all of the content that I'm churning out, you know, text, images, podcasts, you know, may aggravate the problem that I think that you're getting at. I devise, part of what I do, or one way of describing what I do, is that I devise exploits of communications technologies and practices with the hope of influencing people's attitudes and behavior, you know, with regard to mental health and things related to mental health, right? But, I mean, it's worth asking. Every time that there's another Breonna Taylor or George Floyd or Philando Castile, you know, how much communication is too much and how much of the communication that is done is actually helpful or is just, you know, contributing to the oversaturation, you know, that may provoke racial grief, among other things that it may do. And so, I mean, communication is not a morally neutral activity, is it?
No, I don't think it is. I think the way we communicate about minoritized people is pretty violent, actually, in some ways. I always, when people bring this up, I actually ask them to think for a second, are we seeing white people splash across the papers in their desecrated bodies? No, and people still care about those people who are being injured at that point. Why do you need to see images of Black people actually being killed to actually care? Why can't you just hear that somebody, a person, has been hurt or murdered unlawfully, and that should be enough for you to care and to want to take action? Because I think even back in the day when, you know, slave years and things like that, people had horrible things done to African-American people. It didn't change behaviors or attitudes often. And I think to get to your other question, or the other part of your question, is I think there is a way that I find media can be useful. I think when it has a warning to it, I think some of the videos, and some people have started doing this, of the video is actually grayed out and says only click if you want to, and there's graphic content behind this. I think that serves as a warning to African-American people and other minoritized people that this may not be something they want to see, and also to really check in with themselves. Is this something I can handle right now? Because I think everybody is trying to get the word out there that this is happening, but I think we all know by now this is happening. That this is happening with police people, this is happening to minoritized people in general, that we are suffering discrimination. So why do we need to add to that? There's an article I actually read that talked about the trauma, and by proxy trauma, that every African-American or minoritized person experiences every time they see something of that nature, like a violent video, or they read about descriptions about this. So always keeping that in the back of our minds of what is our audience and why do we need to have that violence displayed for people to care. So it's something I think about as well for my own articles, of straddling that line of I need to describe a little bit of what's happening, but not so much that it hurts other Black people who are reading this. So I love that you brought that up.
You write and speak very eloquently about, a certain dimension of the Black experience that I've often thought about. So we're at a place now where, you know, far from being stifled, or I guess only stifled, a lucky few of us are now sought after for commentary on race matters. And a very few lucky of us, and I'm kind of putting that lucky in quotes,
yeah,
even have a degree of hyper visibility, you know. And so it's really a double bind. I mean, you want your Blackness seen, but not be pigeonholed by it, or your experience flattened out. Just because people know that you're Black and have a certain purchase on, you know, the subject matter that you like to comment on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you were bringing that up as well. I think it's an important thing and something I've seen across America. And I'll give an example on Twitter. A lot of people say, oh, who's a Black physician that I should follow? instead of saying who's a person who speaks about race or racism that I should follow, I think it pigeonholes Black people in a lot of ways to only speaking about race. The way I work against that is I actually talk about other things. I talk about loving Sailor Moon and Charmed and K-pop, and I make sure to actually weave that into some of my articles now to show that like I'm much more than just somebody who is Black and gay. Those are facets of myself, but they are not all of who I am. And it also then points to a question of why are you not asking more about who I am beyond those pieces? I think it is an enormous privilege to be able to speak about these things. People do not, who are minoritized too often, do not have their stories heard, or they have them told in a way that is through a white perspective. They also are often silenced by their own places that they work or by places that they try to submit pieces of writing. So I am in a very, I would also put in quotes, fortunate position, because it shouldn't be fortunate. And so I try to speak to those experiences while also showing that I am much more than just those experiences. But you are very right. It creates a double-edged sword of, will this become all of who I am and all of what other people see me as? And so I always have to work against that, which creates actually more work for me sometimes. But I think the best people that I've met are the ones who meet me or we connect on Twitter, and they may ask about things about race at first, but then they ask, what are your dreams? What are your hopes? What are your fears? Who are you as a person? And that's what I try to do with other people that I meet too, who are minoritized, to normalize that we are much more than simply what other people see us as in terms of race and diversity. So I hope that answers the question a little bit.
Yeah, thanks for that. So I always make a note of not just asking about, you know, the things we endure, but also our resilience. Mm. I don't like the word cope that much. I really don't. I find it problematic.
Yep.
But failing to come up with a better one right now, like what sorts of things do you do to cope with all this? What helps give you, you know, resilience, through this weather?
I would have to mention my family first. I have an older sister who is my twin in every way, except for we were not actually twins. And my mom and my dad are all three of them. And my other like people that I know in my family are people I look up to. And I think as time has gone on and I've gotten older, they have been a constant source of support, as well as not only support with my writing and saying you're doing the right thing, but also support. I wouldn't have gotten through med school without them, with all the things with racism and things like that, that were happening. They helped support me through that. And I always want to support my family members. I would also say my other friends from MIT, with them, they taught me what it means to live in a world that is beyond the world we have now, in a place that's trying to actively move beyond race. That's what I got to see at MIT. And we're all still friends, and I still love them just as much. We even had a Zoom session with one of our friends who is pregnant right now, or actually she just had her baby. So those kind of things are really what helped me cope, is staying in contact with them. And then personally, I like to read a lot of fantasy books. That's like one of my favorite things. I'm reading, well, you can tell from my bookshelf, I like love reading. But I love reading fantasy books because I think it shows a better path, in a way that we could move beyond where we are now. And that's something I always keep in mind. There are obviously issues with the publishing industry with representation for minoritized people, but I think the ideas that are presented are a way that helped me cope that maybe we can move beyond this. And then I also listen to K-pop a lot, and I go for 4-hour walks on my own, and I just put my headphones in and I listen to music. And I write. Writing is very cathartic for me, because it not only hopefully helps other people be seen, but it helps me hone my thoughts into a certain way to present to others that maybe will help them feel as though they aren't alone. So those are the ways that I cope and adapt through situations.
What fantasy authors do you like?
So I would say my favorite person right now is Brandon Sanderson. He wrote this series called The Stormlight Archives, and it's still ongoing. The fourth one just came out. So I'm rereading the series from the beginning. It's like 1,000-page books for each book that he writes. It's amazing and really well done. And he actually brings in characters who have mental health concerns and mental health diagnoses and does it in a very nuanced way. And he's also brought in LGBTQ and minoritized characters into his stories. And it's one of the first times I've seen somebody who is white do so in such a way that is read by so many people. I'm probably missing some other authors who have done it, but it is nice to see that happening now. Let me look back. Tamora Pierce is also one of my other favorite authors. She, when I was younger, wrote this series called the Circle of Magic series. And they had characters from different socioeconomic standings, as well as like sexualities and races and things like that. And that's what I thought the world was going to be like, was just people getting along and seeing more than just what somebody looks like. Those are my two favorite authors right now. And then also, I don't know how to spell it, but this person named Bardugo, she wrote this book called Six of Crows, and she actually did a series. And I just think her writing is astounding as well. So those are my top three people right now.
Now, how many fantasy aficionados listen to the podcast, but I'm sure that they'll appreciate those name drops. So thanks for that. Yeah, I just had to ask. So Chase, I'm really glad I did discover your wonderful piece. It's always a treat to be able to have this level of conversation, and as an example of what the Hawk Foundation is trying to do, one more way that mental health shows itself in everyday life. So we really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was an absolute delight, and I'm glad you reached out.
So we talk a lot about social determinants of health on this podcast. And a couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to explore how history is a key social determinant of health. An article in the Journal of Racial and Ethnic Health Disparities makes this connection explicit, titled, "The Past Does Matter: A Nursing Perspective on Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome." It argues that slavery was a major stress event for Black people in the United States, with transgenerational effects that persist to the present. One of the co-authors, Dr. Ryan Sutton, was kind enough to join me on the podcast to discuss this idea and its implications. I'd like to share part of that discussion with you.
Empowering someone to tell their own story, to reclaim their story and either edit it, reframe it, or just put their own spin on their own narrative. Because oftentimes when you have been traumatized or you've been oppressed, you've been given a narrative to hold on to, whether you agree with that narrative or not. But when you empower somebody to take back their own narrative and start working through it, then you empower them to actually do so much more.
The episode is titled "The Past Does Matter: Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome." I've included a link along with other related links in the description for today's episode 107. Well, thank you, friends. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please share it with everyone you can think of, just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others. So it is that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Please leave us a review, subscribe to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, TuneIn, or Spotify. Thanks for joining us.